This is the second half of the first class on multiculturalism in Britain. Let me continue a little bit about the history of Jewish people in Britain. Now, the 17th century Jewish immigration was relatively small. It was a few thousand people. We don't have mass immigration yet at this period in Britain. And so you're talking about a few thousand people. And there was some progress over the next couple of hundred years. There was some progress over the next few hundred years in Jewish people being treated like everybody else, but not really. There was quite a lot of discrimination, religious discrimination. Yeah, the anti-Semitism of the 20th century is a form of racism. Yeah, but at this time this was religious discrimination because it was a Christian country. Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be a secular country. So, for example, you could not become a lawyer if you were Jewish. You could not become a judge if you were Jewish. Now, these, of course, are problems for the elites, but especially at the time. But nevertheless, you could not become a member of parliament because you were Jewish. Nevertheless, before these restrictions were lifted, in the 19th century, one Jewish man, Benjamin Disraeli, as you can see, it was very easy to see that he was Jewish, Benjamin Disraeli, yeah, it's very clear, he became Prime Minister of Britain. The UK in 1868. Now, how was this possible that he was a Jew and he became Prime Minister when the law said you cannot become a lawyer if you're Jewish? Well, in fact, he did what some Jewish families did. His father, when he was 10, his father said, you know, my children, it was a family from a fairly well-off family. He said, my children will never have a good career if they're Jewish. So they were baptized. Yeah, so he converted to Christianity, but not for religious reasons, for practical reasons. Nevertheless, this did not protect him from anti-Semitism because all of his life he was attacked as being a Jew. But nevertheless, you can see that there was a certain integration because he became Prime Minister. We've never had an Arab Prime Minister in France, yeah, so there was progress there. Benjamin Disraeli, who was Prime Minister several times, he was one of the great conservative figures of the late 19th century, in conflict all the time with William Gladstone, the Liberal. He was also an interesting guy because, as well as being Prime Minister, he was a best-selling novelist. Yeah, you don't often get Prime Ministers who are best-selling novelists, but that was his thing. Now, the next wave of Jewish immigration was at the end of the 19th century. After 1880, this is where there were pogroms and even massacres in Poland and in Russia. And so many, many very poor Jews left Russia and Poland and got on ships to come to Britain or to the United States. They were extremely poor, and when they arrived, this was one of the places they could go to, the Jews' temporary shelter. It was just a remember at the time the government would not help them. That was not a government problem, helping poor people. And so basically Jewish money, you can see it's also written in Hebrew, helped some of the poor people. But in fact, the arrival of these many poor Jewish Eastern Europeans who spoke Yiddish, which was the Jewish language from Central Europe, divided the Jewish community. A section of the Jewish community said, we must help them. And another section said, we finally got a better position in society. The law against the discriminatory laws against Jews mostly disappeared in the 1870s and 1860s. 1858, I think. We finally have a reasonable position in society. And now all these poor Jews are arriving. It's going to be bad news. Yeah? So there's no automatic solidarity. But there was some solidarity, and you see it there. But this arrival of poor Jews from Eastern Europe also was the occasion of racist movements against the Jews who were arriving. Yeah, they are invading, etc., etc., etc. And this is an anti-racist meeting. This is quite a new idea. You have to remember that at this time, the word racist did not exist. Yeah, even the word did not exist. It's People did not understand how it worked. But this is, nevertheless, fundamentally an anti-racist meeting by the International Working Men's Educational Club to protest against the inhuman treatment and persecution of Jews in Russia. So this is a protest against the massacres of Jews in Russia at the time. But you can imagine that these are people who would be positive about the immigrants, who would want to welcome the immigrants because they came from here. What is fascinating about this is that, so it's at 5 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, and you can see 20 speakers. It's difficult to go to a political meeting today with 20 speakers. It sounds like a lot, yeah? Nevertheless, you remember, they have newspapers, but they don't have the radio and television. They can't stay at home instead and watch La France en incroyable talent because it doesn't exist, yeah? And so they go, oh, yeah, let's go to a political meeting for 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours. Some of these people are quite well known, in particular William Morris, who is a very famous painting, Eleanor Marx, daughter of Karl Marx, okay, who was active in this, and a number of Russians and so on, Kropotkin. So there was, of course, there was then this anti-racist movement, and of course if you have an anti-racist movement, it's because you have a racist movement. And this was a demonstration against the immigrants. And this was against Jewish immigrants, because that's what they were talking about at the time. Yeah. And so this is a great public demonstration under the auspices of the British Brothers League. Now, if you see British Brothers League, it does sound pretty racist, doesn't it? The British Brothers League. And here they were in favour of restricting the further immigration of destitute foreigners. Yeah, very poor foreigners. Now they don't say just stay with us, please. They don't say Jews, but everybody understands at this time. Yeah, and so this is the and it's a member of parliament who is addressing the meeting. So this is a campaign. You also have a cartoon here, which is, this is an anti-racist cartoon. This is Britannia. Who is you know, the symbol of Britain, who is refusing these poor people who are arriving. So it's a cartoon at the time. There's always been cartoons involved. Now, once the here you're talking about, I don't have numbers, but here you're talking about tens of thousands of people or more. And they would mostly live in the East End of London. They gathered in the East End of London, first of all, because it was cheap. Yeah, and secondly, because there was a whole community there. In fact, if you walked around the east of London, you could hear mostly Yiddish. There was Yiddish theatre, Yiddish opera, Yiddish concerts. That was the thing. Yeah, and here you have in the United Synagogue in London. This is a Jewish marriage certificate, and so you can see that it is written in Hebrew. It's written in Hebrew, and this is where the gentleman playwright lived. Who produced this theatre play. And the theatre play has been completely forgotten, but the expression, the melting pot, has not been forgotten. This is the origin of the expression, the melting pot, so at least he's famous for that. So Israel Tzangwill, of course, a Jew. This, of course, is 50 years before the creation of Israel, so it doesn't have the contra Israel, so it doesn't have the same political meaning. And you can see here the great American drama, The Melting Pot. And here you have all the immigrants arriving from different places and falling into this very, very hot melting pot, notamment creusé. And it doesn't look so much fun. It looks hot. But it's America. That's America. So I haven't read this play, but I would like to read it. I think it's quite an interesting idea. And so there was that. And indeed, there was a very vibrant entertainment and theatre culture in the East End. Yeah, Jewish theatre in London was a big thing, and since there are other things which go in the same direction. The most of the Jews in the East of London at this time worked in clothing. Now, of course, when we think about clothing today, yeah, this is probably made in India or China or something, because that's what we do with clothes today. But at the time, of course, clothes were made by hand mostly, or by a very, very small amount of mechanization, and there was a large number of people working, not very good conditions. And so here you have the trade union, Jewish trade union banner from London in 1882, and you can see, first of all, it's a fairly typical trade union banner from the time with socialist slogans. We're marching towards the morning, we're struggling, comrades, all our aims are set on victory, our enemies must fall. And then the slogan, which I can't read in Hebrew. Yeah, so you've got this multilingual sort of situation. Okay, so I'm coming into the 20th century. I just want to mention some of the famous British Jews who marked British culture over the last centuries. Isaac Rosenberger, one of the best known of the First World War poets. One of the best known of the First World War poets. And there are his poems. It's still being published today and still being read today. That's quite difficult. Usually, if you're a poet, as soon as you're dead, you know, everybody's forgotten your poems, or even before you're dead, or even before you've written them. Isaac Rosenberg has a particular influence there. Mark Gertler, who is a painter, who lived then in East London. And this is what we call a blue plaque. You have more and more of them in France, but they become quite big in London. And they're just to commemorate where people were, where people lived. This is over the last 30 years. It's quite a new thing. And it's because people are more interested in history than they used to be. So you get to a chance to see him. So what did he do? This is Mark Gertler's work. Just to give you an idea. So this is slightly avant-garde from the turn of the 20th century. Another British Jew who became very famous is the theatre writer Harold Pinter. Yeah, Harold Pinter is one of, if you talk about 20th century British playwrights who write theatre, he is one of the four most famous ones. I think this is the only picture I could find in connection with this. Perhaps a better known one is this gentleman, Lucian Freud, a painter. And here you have two examples of his work. There was a big exhibition of his in Paris a few years ago. He is a relative of Sigmund Freud. Notez bien qu'en anglais, on garde la prononciation allemand. Si vous dites en anglais, what do you think of Freud? Nobody will know what you're talking about. It's it's going to be pronounced Freud. So here you have two examples. First of all, this young lady sleeping. And then this one here, I don't know how well you can see it because of the sun, but this is a very, very interesting painting. Do you recognize who it is? The Queen Elizabeth II. Now, is this a typical painting of a queen? It's not. Now, why not? What do you normally get when you have a painting of a queen? Yeah, exactly. Something that makes her look great. Something flattering, positive, and perhaps not very artistically sophisticated. Usually it's a little, yeah. Which this one isn't. What does she look like? Yeah, she looks older. Okay, now I have news for you. It's not so terrible to be old. I know. She's not dead yet. Now here's the big question, and it's a difficult one. Do you think she liked it? How many people think she liked it? How many people think she didn't like it? How many people are not sure? How many people don't care? Okay, yeah. It's actually quite a difficult question. Yeah, why might she like it, possibly? What is positive about how she looks? Of course, you're quite right. She doesn't look young and beautiful. But what is positive about what she looks?
It's original.
It is original, yes, yeah. Now, I think, I don't know if she liked it or not. Yeah, she wouldn't tell, she refused to tell me. But I do have some information. She asked him to paint a picture of her. And she sat for several hours for it to be painted. Now, she's a queen, but she's not stupid. This is what he does. She knew he would not paint a picture where she was young and beautiful. So she might like it. In any case, she looks, and also, like I say, she's not stupid. She knows she's old. You know, We know we're old, okay? So she also looks determined, solid, stable. She might like it, I don't know. But the newspapers were horrified. The conservative newspapers said, "Artist insults our queen." Yeah. And of course, perhaps you remember, the policy of the queen is never to respond, is never to comment. It's Elizabeth, no comment, Windsor. So anyway, Lucian Freud then, British Jewish painter. Another one, Oskar Kokoschka, although I think, I'm pretty sure he worked in Germany and then moved to Britain. And what I like about Oskar Kokoschka is he continued painting until he was like 97 or something. And I like people who do that, because I'm planning to become a painter when I get older. Oskar Kokoschka again. There are a lot of Jews involved in the entertainment industry. And Joe Loss was a big band conductor in the 50s and 60s. And he was the top. This is my parents' generation. They thought he was wonderful. This is in a period before you have the amplification for a discotheque. So if you want to make 100 people dance, you must have 12 or 15 people playing instruments. That's the only possibility. And this is the big band period. Yeah, like I said, big band was 12 or 15. It wasn't 100. Yeah. And these are, I could sing you these songs, but I'm not going to. Arthur Koestler, Jew living in Britain, who wrote many books, including novels, which are really quite impressive. He had how do you say that in English? Une vie très mouvementée. Lots of ups and downs in his life. And a comic actor, Peter Sellers, one of the classic comic actors. It's un petit peu le, comment il s'appelle ce comédien comique français de la génération de vos parents. Voilà, thank you. Yes, that's the one. Yeah, he's the sort of one in England. And here he is playing. Do you recognise this character? He's playing Inspector Clouseau. Yeah, and so this is an English stereotype of a French policeman, and he speaks with a horrific caricature of a French accent. Yeah, and this makes English people laugh. But yeah, there you go. It's mocking French people is a national pastime. More recently, of British Jews, Amy Winehouse is part of this tradition of Jewish input to the entertainment industry. Of course, unfortunately, she died. And in politics, there is a tradition of Jewish politicians. And one guy who I actually met was this is a c'est un peu il est plus vieux mais c'est un peu l'Olivier Besancenot de l'Angleterre il y a 10 ans. Il y a 20 ans, Tony Cliff, or his original name was Gail Gluckstein, and he was incredibly amusing speaker. He never really learned English very well, so he became a political leader at speaking bad English, which is quite good. And in particular, you know, in English, if we as an intensifier, as a slightly rude word, we use the word bloody. So you know, oh, these bloody policemen, etc. Well, he would always put bloody in the middle of a word. So he'd say, well, I'm dis-bloody satisfied. And only he's the only person who did this. Of course, you can't do this in English, but Cliff could carry it. And that is the short history of Jewish immigration. We're going to watch a video in a moment. Next week I'm going to do a short history of Irish immigration, a short history of Caribbean immigration, and a short history of Indo-Pakistani immigration. Yeah? And then we'll move on to the history of racism and anti-racism. But I wanted us to watch a bit of a video, because this is a kind of interesting idea. As you know, I'm a historian, and the very sad thing in this life is that people don't really read history books, do they? Not really, not very much. However, people do quite like films which are based on history. And the British television decided to have a go at history in a new way. And it's a kind of mix between history and reality television. So what they do, and there are many examples, they take a group of people and say, okay, we're going to make you live in the way they did historically. And this particular example is called Back in Time for Brixton. And what they did is they took a black family from England today, and they said, we're going to get you to live how black people in England lived in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. So of course it's partly amusing, yeah, but it is a real attempt to look at. So what they do is they take this family and say, okay, let's imagine your grandfather, what was it like when he arrived in Britain, and they take them to the places. So we're going to watch half an hour of it now. The entire thing is 2 hours long, but we probably won't watch it all in class because afterwards people will think I don't want to work. So I have to switch this off.